even though The Killing Fields did not win Best Picture.
Well, there
what
you
won,
go.
What won Best Picture there?
That was Amadeus. Amadeus.
Amadeus?
Amadeus.
Now you know how to say it properly. Could you even say it the other way you were saying it before?
Amadeus.
Oh. That's elite. Oh, I love that. That is fantastic. Some top tier podcasting right here.
Yeah. That was amazing.
Oh, oh gosh.
I'm a juice.
This is the one of Amadeus.
Yeah, wow.
Oh my.
Oh. It doesn't sound like Amadeus.
You're right. No, it does. So I've spent years, it just took me years to, yeah, listening to stuff to, I was able to say Amadeus.
So you got it right, Josh, obviously. Jason was just saying it the correct French pronunciation.
Yes, yeah.
Amadeus.
I knew I should have taken French instead of German in high school.
Well, I want to learn French, so I feel like this...
Well, you've already started.
Yeah, I feel like I can only get better from here. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Goals on Film, Edge of the Crowd's dedicated sports movies podcast. I'm your host, Jason. I've got Stewie and Josh joining me for this one. Josh, we'll go to you first because this is your debut Goals on Film episode. How are you?
Great. Thanks for having me along, guys. I really appreciate it.
Excited to have Josh join us for the ride. Our very professional, prepared podcast. Wait, that's Jason's side of things. very pleased to be talking about, a seminal classic here, The Karate Kid.
Absolutely. We'll get into it now. And like you said, Stewie, we are doing The Karate Kid, the 1984 karate drama. And so I'll just give you... You don't think it's a drama?
Oh, no. I'd never heard of that genre until just this second. Karate drama. Okay. Yeah, cool. No, please. Go ahead.
All right. Well, I'll give you a synopsis. It's about Daniel and his mother moving to Southern California. But Daniel quickly finds himself the target of a group of bullies who study karate at the Cobra Kai dojo. Fortunately for Daniel, he befriends Mr. Miyagi, an unassuming repairman that just happens to be a martial arts master himself. Mr. Miyagi takes Daniel under his wing, training him in a more compassionate form of karate and preparing him to compete against the brutal Cobra Kai at the tournament at the end of the year, which we see Daniel win. So having watched the movie, having thought about the movie, what did you think about it? What did you like about it? Was there anything that you didn't like about it?
On the rewatch, it's, as I always remember it, it's just that really heartwarming movie where... It, over time, like as a kid, I loved the fight scenes. That's all I cared about as a kid. As I've grown up, you obviously see the friendship between Mr. Miyagi and Daniel grow, yeah. Which is actually quite awesome because, you know, they're two people that aren't – they're sort of fish out of water, really. So Daniel coming from New Jersey, and obviously Mr. Miyagi's been there for a while, but, you know, he's just the unassuming repairman that – uses karate only for defense. So, but yeah, it's always a good, and it's always hard for me to not like, I don't tear up, but you know, when the climactic fight scene happens, it's hard not to get excited watching, Johnny Lawrence's head get kicked off.
Well, I have to say, and I'm going to get this in early this week, Jason, because we almost forgot about it. It got a 6 out of 10 for me on IMDb on the rewatch. Now, it is a seminal classic and there is a healthy dose of nostalgia when you watch the movie. That can't be denied. But I just fear for the quality and the enjoyability of the movie if that dose of nostalgia wasn't a part of the viewing experience. Obviously, I love the story. I love the fight scenes still. Almost 40-year-old man, love the fight scenes. They're fantastic. I love the training scenes. And I guess to Josh's point, I enjoy the unlikely friendship of Daniel and Mr. Miyagi as well. We mentioned this last night when we watched it, Jace. Mr. Miyagi is the MVP of this movie. Every scene he is in, he absolutely steals. I won't step on future segments, but it was – I watched it.
I hope you watched it. But yeah, no, I think that I obviously agree with both of you. I think that, like, when I watched it when, you know, I was young, you know, probably I'll say 10 years ago now, but
but how dare you.
I was just thinking the same thing.
I think that, like, and I said this to you as well, I think that, like, watching it now, I don't know how many times I may have watched it between first watching it and now, but I feel like watching it now, like, I did sort of understand the story a lot more and like what was happening and connect the story a lot more. Whereas I said this to you last night, like, I think that when I was watching it previously, I just saw an old man taking advantage of a young boy. And now I kind of like understand, like, the methods of, like, you know, what Mr. Miyagi was teaching and how he was teaching it and how that helped Daniel. And just, like, yeah, the way that he sort of went about his teaching. And, yeah, obviously it wasn't about sort of fighting, you know, to attack your opponent or injure them or anything like that. But, you know, you could sort of see that, you know, there was a lot more to his methods of training. That I think that, you know, really sort of come through in terms of, like, having someone think about, like, how karate or, like, a martial arts isn't so much for the sort of just, like, punching and kicking and trying to injure your opponent. I think that it showed that there was a lot more to it.
Yeah, I think it's something that, you know, and once again, you know my ats if you're a regular listener to this podcast, so hit me up if I've got this wrong, but there's a lot more depth to the movie than what you first, you know, we've all spoken about our experiences watching it as young fellas or whatever. And a lot of that just goes over your head when you're watching it. But there's a lot more. That's one thing I will speak to on the rewatch that we did last night.
All right. Well, before we get into our first proper segment, I do just have a few fun facts for you about this movie. And so in the opening scene, the kids chasing the car down the street, waving goodbye, are all from the neighborhood. They were hanging around the set, interfering with the shoot, and the director offered to put them in the movie if they would just leave the crew alone.
Very good.
I read that, yeah. That was a good one. I thought
that was quite funny. And the Halloween fight between Miyagi and Johnny and four of his gang members, who I think that I did actually read as well, that Johnny and his is always with his gang, like they're always in shot with Johnny as well. That lasts 9 seconds, one of the fastest fight sequences in a feature film.
Wow, okay.
Didn't know that one.
It's incredible that it was a 2-hour movie if they could do 9-hour fight scenes. 9-minute fight scenes. Nine seconds.
Imagine a 9-hour fight scene.
Jackie Chan could pull that up.
Yeah. Again, we'll come back to the reboot. All right. Well, we will go into references to history now. And Josh, we might start with you because you have one relating to when Mr. Miyagi gets drunk.
Yes, so if you've seen the movie, you know there's a scene where Mr. Miyagi is drowning his sorrows and Daniel comes by to check on him and has a drink with him. And he's reminiscing about his time in the war. And the 442nd regimental combat team that is mentioned in the film was an actual team in real life that fought in World War II. They were made up of second generation Japanese Americans, and they were called, yeah, the regiment, the 442nd Regimental Combat Team, but they're also known as the Purple Heart Battalion. They were formed in 1943 and were active from 1944 to 1946.
Wow, that's incredible.
It really is, yeah.
There's awesome. Those layers of depth again that, you know, you probably when you're watching it as a 10-year-old, you don't pick up on that kind of stuff, so yeah.
I was 10. I thought he was a silly man getting drunk on my dad.
I honestly don't think I remember that scene either, like in previous watches. You know, whether it was just like I looked at it as some guy just like, you know, laughing hysterically, but also like being really sad or anything like that. But I think I was watching it last night and I was like, was this scene in there when I watched it originally? Like, I don't know. That's an important scene.
It is. It's very important.
The backstory and stuff.
Yeah. There's some questionable actions by Mr. Miyagi in that scene. plying Daniel with some sake.
Yeah.
Yeah, Daniel's just a high school student, so
yes.
Not on, Mr. No. Miyagi.
No, it isn't. All right, well, one other thing that I have here in references to history, and I'm not sure it's a reference to history, but it's of something that was referenced in this movie, and so we'll sort of frame it as a reference to history, I guess. We have Mr. Miyagi sort of explain to us the sort of etymology of karate, and sort of like the name where karate came from.
How come you didn't tell me?
Tell you what?
That you do karate.
You never ask.
Yeah, well, where'd you learn it from?
Father.
I thought he was a fisherman.
In Okinawa, all Miyagi know two things. Fish and karate. Karate come from China, 16th century, called te, hand. Much later, Miyagi ancestor called karate. Empty hand.
I always thought it came from Buddhist temples and stuff like that.
You're too much TV.
That's what my mother tells me.
And so he says that, he sort of says that, the name karate was changed from what was meaning like empty hand. So this was actually true. It was to indicate that the Japanese wished to develop the combat form in Japanese style.
So it was originally a Chinese martial art called Tai.
Mm. Yep.
Ah, right. Interesting. Yep. That's incredible.
And the other reference to history here that I have is that Miyagi's habit of calling Daniel Daniel-san.
Daniel-san.
Is a lot funnier if you know a little about the Japanese language. Ooh. And so the suffix san is an honorific, roughly akin to Mr. or Sir, used to address one's elders or social superiors, and not the sort of thing that an older man would typically use to address his teenage student. Those would usually be kun or chan. So when Mr. Miyagi says it, he's not just being charmingly exotic, he's subtly mocking Daniel for being young and inexperienced. And at the same time, Japanese names frequently list family name first, given name second. So Daniel-san is basically Mr. Daniel, not unlike Kreese calling Johnny Mr. Lawrence.
Ah, wow. Okay. Interesting. Cool. Jason-san.
Respect your elders. We will move on to how well this film depicts the sport.
For me, this is, I'd say it's very true.
Yeah.
The rules, a lot of the rules, karate tournament rules, I think they get spot on, except for the final kick that's much debated over the years between people who obviously support Cobra Kai, because there are a few. I found out later that, you know, some people see Daniel as the bully and Johnny Lawrence. So
tell us about that, Josh.
Well, a lot of people feel that Daniel's the one that picks on, or not picks on Johnny, but attacks him first, especially in the beach fight scene.
Okay.
I went back in watching that with that in mind, and I'm pretty, looking back, I'm sure Johnny kicks Daniel first in the mid area,
mm-hmm.
before Daniel punches him, but everyone is sure that Daniel's the one that strikes first. And then also with the prank in the
bathroom,
people felt there was no need for him to do that. And that's just, you know, bullying behavior, and that he deserved to get chased down.
Well, to that point, the fight that happens on the soccer pitch when he's trying out for the soccer team, Daniel definitely, like, he cops a hefty tackle. That can't be denied. But he definitely instigates the fight that ensues after that tackle. So maybe there's a bit of credence to these Cobra Kai sympathizers. I don't know.
I was actually going to bring this up too, because I remember How I Met Your Mother. They had a pretty big sort of discussion about this in the last season. And Barney, so played by Neil Patrick Harris, he insists that Johnny Lawrence is the real Karate Kid and is his personal hero. And a real life fan theory, like you were saying, states that Daniel is the real bully while Johnny is the actual Karate Kid. And yeah, so it includes, the argument includes the fact that Johnny only uses his skills for defense or de-escalation, while Daniel is always the attacker. It also suggests that Daniel wanted to learn karate not just to compete with Johnny, but to take revenge. And Daniel even states that he wants to learn karate for revenge until Mr. Miyagi criticizes his view.
Have you ever taught anyone?
No.
Well, would you?
Depend.
On what?
Reason.
How's revenge?
Daniel-san, you look revenge that way. Start by digging to grave.
Well, at least I have company, right?
Fighting always last answer to problem.
Oh, no offense, Mr. Miyagi, but I don't think you understand my problem.
Miyagi understand problem perfect. You a friend, all karate student, eh?
Friend? Oh, yeah, those guys.
Problem attitude.
No, problem is I'm getting my ass kicked every other day. That's the problem.
Because boys have bad attitude. Karate for defense only.
That's not what these guys are taught, man.
I can see. No such thing, bad student, only bad teacher. Teacher say, student do.
Oh, great. That solves everything for me. I'll just go down to the school and straighten it out with the teacher, no problem.
Now use head for something other than target.
I was only kidding about that.
Why kidding?
Because I get killed if I show up there.
Get killed anyway.
And so, yeah, I guess the theory sort of ignores, you know, Johnny's sort of more villainous aspects at the same time, including his treatment of Ali as well. But I feel like, you know, an argument could even be made for Daniel and his treatment of Ali at times as well. And so, yeah, like, I think that I was watching this movie, like, remembering back to that season of How I Met Your Mother. And I remember watching, like, yeah, The Karate Kid last night, like, with that in mind. I was, like, really looking at it. I was like, maybe Johnny is actually the Karate Kid and Daniel's the bully. And so I feel like that argument sort of does stand up, you know. I think that other, like, people will have views either way. But I think that there is actually a case that could be made that it is that way.
So the million-dollar question, I seem to be the only one that came into the movie without prior knowledge of this. And Johnny definitely seemed like the villain to me. Where do you guys land?
I'm just landing solely on the fact that Daniel is the new kid in town. He doesn't know who Ali is, like in the beach scene at the beginning. He's obviously a pretty girl. You're going to talk to her, aren't you? You don't know who her boyfriend is. You've just moved there. And then suddenly some goon comes, smashes her boombox, and like, you want to stick up for her. So
Daniel's a hero as far as you're concerned?
Daniel, I've thought about Johnny, like, I sympathise with Johnny at times, especially with how his teacher is, but for me, Daniel's the hero.
What about you, Jace?
I don't know. I feel like I'm going to sit on the fence with this one, to be honest with you. Like I said, I can see it either way. I think that looking at it last night, watching it last night with this knowledge, I sort of lean more towards Daniel being a bit of a bully because, like, you know, he's sort of new to town. He's sort of like, and even just like really from the start, whether you like, you know, obviously the first instance that he has with Johnny is at the beach, but he seems to from there, like, just pick fights all the time with Johnny, like do things to instigate Johnny being sort of disgruntled and like, you know, want to sort of like fight him as well. And he just seems to be like, Daniel seems to be like an intimidator as well, I think, of all of it. And so I think that, yeah, I think from all of that, like his motives at the start or even like towards the sort of middle part of the movie, I think that I do see Daniel as being a villain.
Doesn't seem like you're sitting on the fence, mate.
No.
No? So you're in the Daniel as a villain category.
Yeah, I feel like you said, like you can sympathise with Johnny and maybe some of that is down to Chris, his teacher. You know, like he seems to be calling the shots, being really like, authoritative about do this, train this way. And maybe it's just for Johnny, like a case of, you know, having to listen to the teacher but not really wanting to as well.
I don't know. I got to disagree strongly with both of you guys. Johnny seems like a fucking douchebag to me. So Daniel's the hero in my head canon, but don't let me control what goes on in your head. That's totally fine. I mean, you're wrong, but it's totally fine.
All right. Well, we'll move on to a bit more about how this depicts the sport. And so the Karate Kid, right? You'd believe that they're doing karate in this movie, but what I've found is that martial arts shown in the movie actually is Tung Soo Do, a martial art created in South Korea, which one of its main purposes is to be used as a means of self-defense. That was because Pat E. Johnson, who also appears as the head referee in the All Valley Under 18 tournament, doesn't know karate. He was only trained in Tung Soo Do by actor and martial artist Chuck Norris. And Chuck Norris does come up a bit more, sorry. Okay. So save that laughter. But okay. Tung Soo Do also has elements from Shokukan, Subak Do, I'm not going to even pronounce that one, Kung Fu, Karate Do, and Taekwondo.
Wow.
So it incorporates so many elements.
Is that why I noticed on this, on my recent rewatch, that a number of the Cobra Kai students have different stances, even though they have the one teacher?
Yeah.
I did notice some of them have the hands down here, some of them are up here and that sort of thing. But yeah, that's, I'm looking at it because I can be a bit of a stickler in fight scenes. I remember, I'll just go off script here a little bit.
Yeah.
I remember criticizing a guy punching a punching bag in Katy Perry's Teenage Dream film. when I was seriously into my martial arts, I'm like, that guy's doing it all wrong. But I was just, because I do sometimes pick from watching and doing martial arts myself, I do pick the fighting stances and that. And I did notice some of, like, the core group of Cobra Kai's do have different stances at times.
Well, you might think it was elocution, Karate Kid.
Yeah.
But just sitting here, since I found out, and, you know, from my research, obviously I've known for weeks before this podcast, what about the Tung Soo Do teenager? Ooh. That's got a different. It is different. It's definitely different, but I meant to say decent. Decent ring to it. I think that sounds good.
Just don't say it 10 times fast.
All right, I said that I would come back to Chuck Norris, Stuart, and I sort of said there that the referee in that final match is Pat E. Johnson, a karate expert, or maybe a Tung Soo Do expert, and former student of Chuck Norris. He instructed many movies in stars in karate. He's credited as the fight instructor / choreographer for the film, and so he choreographed all the fights in the tournament. And, I think that, the producers made him the referee, obviously was involved in the sport. And I think that, you know, having someone who is a karate expert, former student of Chuck Norris as well, as the fight instructor / choreographer, it just brings a bit more to the movie in terms of, like, finding out that, like, you know, all these things. And while you said that there were differences between the, the karate people's stances from the Cobra Kai dojo, I think that having someone like Pat E. Johnson definitely gave it a bit more, grounding in terms of, like, being authentic in terms of showcasing the sport.
Only Chuck Norris could have nothing to do with a movie and essentially have a whole segment on this podcast about him. That's all I want to say.
All right. You sort of brought it up before as well, Josh, but the crane technique that Daniel uses at the end, like you said, people have debated whether it is legal or illegal. What's your view?
I thought it was legal. I mean, at times I thought there were punches to the face. And can't remember if they got points taken off them for that, but I just, I assumed that ever since I was a kid watching it up to now, I assumed that's it. So
it looks fucking sick, so it's all right with me.
It does look pretty sick, and it's pretty iconic too, I think. And I think that all of my research that I could find, like, you know, no one could give me a definitive answer. It was like, this site says it's legal, this site says it's illegal. According to these rules, it's this. And so I don't even think that anyone really has any idea. So it must be legal.
Let's make the call, Jason. Is it legal or illegal? Let's end the debate right now.
It's legal.
Legal? Yeah. All right. We'll go with that.
All right. Well, it was Daryl Vidal who came up with the crane technique, and he was a tournament semi-finalist. And He can actually be seen doubling Pat Morita when he's practicing the move on the wooden stumps in the beach scene. He also helped out with much of the choreography, including his own fight scenes, and he still runs his own martial arts school to this day. So we can have Daryl Vidal to thank for Daniel's karate technique and that eventual kick and the win.
So you're saying that the crane technique is a real karate technique?
Yep.
I'm not surprised, Dad. It would be.
Yeah, okay. Yep. Interesting.
So it's basically fictional, but it is based on a real stance called the crane stance that's used in several traditional karate kata.
Karate what?
Kata.
Kata. Never heard that before.
So kata's like, how do you explain it? It's like moves that you do. People perform it at tournaments and...
It's like a technique.
It's techniques, but it's like you do it, you do moves like you go... block, punch and stuff like that. Sometimes you do it by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And you do that for your teacher, and that's usually when you get graded, and they have different forms of it as going up the belt.
Could I just correct you there, Josh? Go. Sensei.
Sensei, sorry. Yeah,
not teacher. Sensei. Okay.
You got me there.
So the tournament does prohibit punches to the face. Johnny was warned for using one in the finals, but kicks to the face are legal. Earlier in the tournament, Dutch kicked Daniel in the face and received no penalty, proving that kicks to the face are in fact legal in this tournament.
So they did get docked points for punching in the face? Good. I was hoping they would.
Yeah. All right. And there seems to be a bit of a debate as well between Daniel sort of receiving a black belt. He doesn't really receive one officially. He's just asked at the tournament, which belt are you? And Mr. Murray is like, black belt.
Let's see. Yeah, it's belt. What belt are you?
Belt?
Why am I talking?
It's open divisions. It's only for brown belt or above.
Oh, yeah. Boy, black belt.
Okay. You better hustle. They're starting. Down the hall to your left.
And so someone's done the research on this, right? That Mr. Miyagi began training Daniel apparently on November 1st. And the tournament took place on December 19th, meaning that Daniel earned his black belt in 48 days. In real life, it takes the average person 4 to 5 years to earn a black belt. I think possibly even more than that as well. That seems a little bit low to me because my sister, shout out Nicole, she did karate for quite some time, and I think that she did it for more than 5 years, and she got to second degree black belt, I think. I think that it can take some time, but yeah.
How many of those karate students have painted a house and sanded a deck and polished cars and done all this extra stuff though, you know? So maybe he's got brownie points for, chores.
Maybe.
Maybe you just taught him the highest level of what you need to know to survive in a tournament like that. And, it's always how you fight on the day as opposed to how good you are sometimes, so...
I will say Mr. Miyagi is an icon. Mm. So who are we or anyone else on the internet to question Mr. Miyagi?
That's right. We can't.
Yeah, that's right. Moving on.
Moving on. Stewie, this segment has returned. This is Errors in Geography.
Here we go. Geography school with Jace. This is fantastic. Josh, you're in for a treat here, mate.
Looking forward to this.
So in the beginning scene, when Daniel and his mother are driving away down the street, they're said to be leaving Newark, New Jersey, correct? Mm-hmm. However, that street is actually in Harrison, New Jersey, and is also a one-way street going the opposite way. Harrison is a neighbouring town.
What are these movie creators thinking, doing things like this, thinking that they can get these geography missteps past the geography guru of Jason here? I mean, sure, he wasn't born yet when this movie was made, but anyone with any sense would be able to sense Jason's soon to be created, and he's going to pick up on all these geography fuck-ups. So shame on the film producers here.
Yeah, that's right. Like
shame.
Martin Scorsese, just come to me first.
Yeah, make sure the geography's straight, okay? Geography as well. He can make sure it's straight, even though that's not really geography, but we'll just brush over that. Just come see Jason first to avoid any shame being thrown your way on the Goals on Film podcast.
any location scouting. Yes, Jason.
Absolutely. King location scout here.
Mm-hmm.
What else you got?
That's the only geography, error in geography that I have. So we will end that segment there.
That was a good one. I like that.
Keep it short and sweet, baby.
All right, let's move on to looking at the cast now. And so I'll just give you a bit of a run through about the main cast list. And so we had Ralph Macchio as Daniel LaRusso, Pat Morita as Mr. Miyagi, William Zabka as Johnny Lawrence, Elizabeth Shue as Ellie Mills, Martin Cove as John Kreese, and we had Randy Heller as Lucille LaRusso. And so thinking about that cast list, obviously we had so many other people appear in this movie as well. What did you make of the cast list, and is there anyone that you particularly want to single out with their performance?
Obviously Miyagi. He is the, like you said, the MVP of the movie. He's just something about him. And when you, like, when the friendship starts to happen and they bond, that's when you start to like him more. So they absolutely, no one could play that character with you just couldn't replace him. Daniel's good as the new kid, and even Johnny Lawrence is great as the villain. Well, you know, debatable. because you know, California, blonde hair, good looking guy. They cast that well. They cast the three main ones. Well, and even I'm pretty sure Elizabeth Shue was sort of at that height of her powers in 84. So that was a good casting choice. I can't think of anyone else that could possibly play that role off the top of my head. So, yeah, the main cast is good. The mum's all right, but, you know, she's in the background.
Yeah,
she's
not
you just get annoyed with her because she moved them there for a computer job and suddenly she's working in a restaurant.
That's true.
Yeah. So wait, hang on, where's your computer job? Good benefits at this restaurant. I'm like, Jesus, that didn't last long.
Yeah, I gotta back up my man Josh here. Mr. Miyagi, Pat Morita, fantastic in this movie. All you gotta do is watch the movie to see how great he is in it. Just can't say enough good things about him. And I guess a true testament is they did do a remake that we've touched on a couple of times, I think, already. And they tried to recast that role and it didn't work out too well. No. As far as the other cast goes, now you said something off mic before, Jace, about Sean Penn saying Ralph Macchio is one of the greatest actors of his generation.
I did say that, yes.
Yeah, I call bullshit on that. Not on you, but on Sean Penn.
Right.
Any kid could have played that role, I think. Just pick a kid from New Jersey in the 80s, they could have done it. Elizabeth Shue is quite good. I think you can see just from watching it. I mean, when you watch an 80s movie, right, when you sit down to watch it, you automatically accept, okay, this is going to be to a different standard to what I'm used to if I'm going to the cinema, right? But you can still, the bad actors stand out more, and there is a lot of bad acting in this movie. I think Johnny has the look right, to your point. I don't think he's got the acting chops. Apparently he's good in Cobra Kai.
He's great in Cobra Kai.
I have not watched that. I plan to. Apparently you have to watch Karate Kid 2 and 3 before you watch Cobra Kai. So I'll get to those. I'll struggle through those and get into Cobra Kai. But yeah, the cast is, you know, I'm not one to shit on a classic, but the cast is atrocious. And I must say, one of my best mates, Tim, texted me last night. He found out we were doing this film on Goals on Film. And he said to me, you better say nice things about the Karate Kid or I'm going to have to rethink our friendship. So, Tim, listen, mate, this is as nice as it gets. You know, Mr. Miyagi's good. Elizabeth Shue's good as Ali. The rest of the cast could have been anyone, in my opinion.
You know, and in my opinion too.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I don't think that anyone else could play Mr. Miyagi or even possibly Ali. I think that they were both sort of the standouts of this movie. I think that it was a testament as well when we were watching it, Stewie, that like I think that all of the points that we laughed at was all to do with Mr. Miyagi.
Mm-hmm.
And so like he has some great lines in this movie. One of my favorites is like when Daniel's asking him what belt he has. And it's like a $398 one from JCPenney.
Hey, what kind of belt do you have?
Canvas. You like? JCPenney, 398.
No, I didn't mean a belt like that. I meant...
Okinawa, belt mean no need rope, hold up pants.
that's funny.
We had a good laugh about his breathing technique.
Yes, breathe in, breathe out. Very important part.
Wax on, right hand. Wax off, left hand. Wax on, wax off. Breathe in through nose, out the mouth. Wax on, wax off. Don't forget to breathe. Very important.
It's not only of martial arts, but of life. No. I don't know if people know that, but yeah.
Yeah, so I think that, yeah, Pat Morita was obviously, I think, the best actor in this movie for me. And I think I said this to you last night as well. Like, there were parts, and I have watched, I think, like the first season of Cobra Kai, so I've got a bit to catch up on. And I also haven't watched the second or third Karate Kid in this franchise with Ralph Macchio. But I think that... I think that having watched Cobra Kai, I can see Ralph Macchio and Billy Zabka sort of like have grown up, obviously, and they're well-established actors now. Yes, they've grown up, Stewie.
Time. Wow.
But I think that like you can definitely tell that like they've had this experience now, and while they're playing the same characters, like it is an improvement. And so I think that, yeah, like it is obviously... shows that like obviously when they're like 15 or 22 as Ralph Macchio was, I don't know how old Billy Zabka was, but I can see that like, you know, they were sort of like new to acting as well. I could see them sort of like, you know, not really convey their character or like a tone of voice as confidently as sort of the character should or as the actor should as well. And so I found that really hard to sort of like connect with these actors at times. And sort of like, yeah, it just didn't seem like that they were totally into it. It seemed like they were a bit reserved about how they were needed to sort of portray the actor at times or the character at times. And so that was a bit difficult for me to sort of get into. And then it also just proves that, you know, there was sort of like worlds apart in terms of Ralph Macchio and Billy Zabka versus Pat Morita, for instance. And so I think that you could definitely tell... the difference between just, I think, the experience of acting between both sides, sort of young and old. But I think that, yeah, I sort of saw some sort of reservation in Ralph Macchio and Billy Zabka.
I completely agree with all those points that you made. What kind of careers outside of the Karate Kid verse did these guys have? Do you guys know?
Well, you obviously had Karate Kid 2, 3,
mm-hmm.
that Macchio starred in. Zabka wasn't in either of those two. But then they did, funnily enough, they did the next Karate Kid, which starred Hilary Swank.
I saw that.
Yeah. And then other than a few, I can't think exactly off the top of my head, I know Ralph Macchio has a cameo in Entourage.
Okay, yep.
And... Billy Zabka has another martial arts movie, B-grade martial arts movie to his name called Shoot Fighter.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember if that was, I'm pretty sure that is after Karate Kid, where he plays the hero and a bad guy that people who followed any movies that Van Damme starred in by the name of Boy Young, he was their mentor in that, so...
Right.
That's, yeah, like I love B-grade martial arts movies.
Okay.
I often made the joke that all through my butchery and hospitality and our journalism career that my plan B was to move to Hong Kong and be an action movie star, martial arts star. So that was plan B. That was just a joke I can bring up around. But, yeah, so I've just got this thing for B-grade martial arts films. They're so good. So some of them are so good, but some of them are so bad that they're so good. So, they're worth the watch. Even, you know, some people hate watching movies with subtitles. I love martial arts movies with subtitles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm just looking here now between Ralph Macchio and Billy Zabka's sort of filmography since Karate Kid. And to be honest with you, I don't recognize anything that Billy Zabka's been in since The Karate Kid. Yeah, I can't think of anything that I've seen that he's been in, but he did receive an Academy Award nomination a nomination for co-writing and producing the short film Most. That was in 2003. 2004 was when he received the nomination. And Ralph Macchio, I don't know how much he was involved in these movies or how much screen time he had in these movies, but there are a couple here that I do recognise, sort of My Cousin Vinny, Hitchcock, but Psych, the movie from 2017, some television films, some short films, but it seems to be sort of like one a year sort of thing. So not at the degree of, you know, your more sort of Hollywood blockbuster stars that we sort of know today.
Well, I guess when you star in a seminal classic like The Karate Kid, you can just sit back and live off the residuals. I mean, all of us watched it in the last 48 hours, I would say. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure a portion of that has gone into their pockets. So they're still making money on it 40 years later, so good luck to them.
And they've got producing credits and that on Cobra Kai as well. Mm. So, you know, they're still making bank. With that franchise too. So, you know, they're getting by just fine, I reckon. So, but I don't know if you remember watching How I Met Your Mother, Jason.
Mm.
They talk about Billy Zabka being a poet. Is that an actual thing, do you know? Because I remember they throwing in there that someone liked him, one of the characters liked him for his poetry.
Well, when I've controlled F on his Wikipedia page and typed in poet, nothing comes up. So I'm not quite sure.
No, that's fair enough. I thought it was worth a try.
Maybe it's just one of Barney's lies or something.
Possibly, yeah.
All right. Well, I feel like we're coming back to a few different things, but this is just the research that I've found that I've listed under this particular category. And it sort of comes back to the fact of, you know, whether Billy Zabka was the villain, Johnny Lawrence was the villain. Extras were so caught up in the tournament scene that they would boo William Zabka, even when the cameras were not rolling and Zabka's mother was in the crowd and kept trying to tell people that he was actually very nice in real life.
Good on you, Mrs. Zabka.
That's classic. I love that.
Yeah.
I also feel like that's something my mum would do.
Yeah, me too, to be honest.
Same, yeah.
According to Zabka, the character he portrays still irks many people. Some have started to try fights with him. He has to convince them that the role was specifically written for the movie. but he actually had no karate experience prior to the movie as well. He is an accomplished wrestler, and he actually continued his karate training and became a second degree green belt after this movie. So it's, you know, we talk about art imitating life. You know, I think that this is sort of art.
This is life. Yeah. This is life imitating art.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, is it imitating if it's life?
Not really.
It's life being art.
Yeah.
It's life derived from art. That's beautiful, man.
Yeah. And I'll come back to the drunk Miyagi scene as well. The studio wanted to actually drop that scene.
Wow.
Feeling that it slowed the pace down, which I can somewhat agree, but I think that, as I sort of said, I think it was an important scene for background. And so director John Avildsen argued for it, and he felt that it was the scene that got Pat Morita nominated for an Oscar. So this movie features Pat Morita's only Oscar-nominated performance. He actually had no actual experience in karate either, but I think that, you know, like we're saying, we're talking about the cast as well and their performances, but I can definitely see how this performance from Pat Morita would be worthy of an Oscar nomination.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Fantastic performance.
Especially in that scene, that drunken scene. Yeah. Glad they didn't cut it. That is important for background. And I'm not sure if you read this as well, but the bonsai design, Morita designed that himself.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, so cool.
All right, well, I do just have up the Best Supporting Actor nominations and winner from the a 57th Academy Awards here, which were done in 1985.
Okay, wait, before you do this, don't tell us who won. Just run through the nominees in the movie.
All right.
And we'll see if we can guess.
All right, cool. So I'll do it out of order in case, you know, you guys have it up, even though I see that you don't. we have Adolf Caesar for A Soldier's Story. We have Pat Morita for The Karate Kid. We have Hwang Nyor for The Killing Fields. We have John Malkovich for Places in the Heart. And we have Ralph Richardson, a posthumous nomination for Greystoke, The Legend of Tarzan, Lord of the Apes.
Easy for you to say. Who you got, Josh?
I'm going with my man Malkovich.
Malkovich? Who's the guy from The Killing Fields?
Hwang Nyor.
I'm going to go with Hwang Nyor because I feel like The Killing Fields is an Oscar monster. I could be wrong, though.
No, you are correct, Stewie. You are correct.
Well, all that time listening to the rewatchables and the big picture, it's paid off.
All right, so I just have one fact to round this off about Martin Cove, who played Kreese. So William Zadko revealed in an interview that during rehearsals, Martin Cove delivered the sweep the leg line in a calm manner. But when they filmed it, he said it in a cold voice.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that?
No, Sensei.
No mercy.
Which shocked everyone, including Zabka, whose shocked expression on screen was actually genuine.
Wow. Can we talk about casting what ifs, Jason?
We can.
Because this is the only research I did.
Yes.
Casting what ifs. So there is a list that you would not believe. Particularly you would not believe, Jason, mm-hmm. because you did no research on this.
I didn't. So please tell me everything.
So there are some crazy names that are sort of potentially could have made this movie. Some of them quite hilariously. I'm just going to run you through some of them and I want you guys to let me know if you think it would work or if it wouldn't work. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's start at the top. Charlie Sheen. Is this working as a Charlie Sheen, 1984 Charlie Sheen vehicle?
I can see him being Daniel LaRusso in terms of appearance,
mm-hmm.
but perhaps not like manner.
Yeah, he would act it too well.
Mm.
Yeah.
100% he'd act it too well.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. What about Emilio Estevez, Charlie Sheen's brother?
Yeah, I can't see Emilio in this role as well for the same reason.
Mm-hmm.
He'd acted too well. Like you can picture him in like as Daniel LaRusso, but not the mannerisms and the acting.
You'd have to change it if Emilio Estevez was Daniel because he's very Hispanic, but I guess that would work maybe mm-hmm. being from New Jersey. Let's stay on this Charlie Sheen tip here and go with John Cryer, his co-star in 2.5 Men. Could John Cryer have played Daniel's son?
No. not anything against John Cryer, but 1980s John Cryer, he was just pretty in Pinky that he starred in. This could have been the movie where he came across as something different than the best friend
mm-hmm.
in Pretty in Pink, but you just can't picture him doing it.
Yep, Jace.
I feel like he's just like too awkward and too sort of like flunky.
I am going to go against the grain here. I think John Cryer perhaps could have pulled this role off. I wouldn't have bought him as, you know, a tough kid from New Jersey by any stretch of the imagination. But I think he could have brought something a little bit different to the role. Would have made a completely different movie, obviously, like many of these names we're discussing here. But I think out of them, probably John Cryer is the name that that sticks out to me. The final one I'm going to go with here is Sean Penn.
Mm.
Incredible actor. I'm not too across his 80s catalogue, but 1984 Sean Penn. What do you guys think about him?
Nah, he was, even back then, he was too good of an actor. I've seen bits and pieces of him from the 80s,
mm-hmm.
but it's this movie, again, completely different movie with him in the role, but it's just, it wouldn't work.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to put this to you. This is completely off the cuff, ladies and gentlemen, so this should be fun. If Ralph Macchio didn't exist, who would you cast as Daniel LaRusso? Josh, I'm going to put you on the hot seat.
I think someone mentioned Robert Downey Jr. before, and I can see him doing that.
Mm, yeah, Robert Downey Jr. was on the list. Thanks for reminding me. Jason?
Well, I've also, contrary to what you were saying before, I have seen A-List.
Okay. And, wow. This is completely news to me. I am shocked.
One of the names on that list was mm-hmm. Nicolas Cage.
Wow. You're a fan of Nicky C?
Yeah, I don't mind him, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah.
Where are you at with Nicolas Cage, Josh? Not to do with the Karate Kid, just generally.
I like Nick Cage.
Wow.
90s Nick Cage specifically?
Yeah.
Like The Rock and Face Off and that?
Yeah.
Yeah,
they're both Nicolas Cage movies.
Especially The Rock. That's I like that a lot. Not so much later Nick Cage, but I will say I'm a fan.
What about Pig? Either of you guys seen Pig, the Nicolas Cage movie from 2021 or 2020? So
I haven't yet. No.
That's where my love affair with Nick Cage starts and ends.
Okay.
Not a fan at all. But Nicolas Cage for you.
Yeah.
RDJ for you. And I'm going to go with John Cryer. Let's make this a poll on the podcast. We'll give those three options and we'll see what the fans think.
All right.
And any of my family listening out there, John Cryer. Okay.
John Cryer, I was going to say, would be an interesting one as Daniel, because Jason mentioned that he was a bit awkward and
mm-hmm.
getting taught, going from that awkward teen to watching him progress over time would be an interesting watch as well. So I think that's a good one.
Absolutely. For the party vibes, for everyone else on set, for them, I kind of wish it was Charlie Sheen because I'm sure it would have been a fucking party if Charlie Sheen was on set. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, I think that we're coming around to John Cryer, honestly. After what Josh just said. Yeah. If we want to just continue a bit more casting what ifs. Just coming back to Chuck Norris, honestly.
Really?
Yeah. So Martin Cove was rumoured to have replaced Chuck Norris. Who had allegedly turned down the role of Kreese because he didn't want karate trainers to be shown in an unsympathetic light. Norris has since said that he was never offered the role, but if he had have been, he would have declined it for similar reasons.
That's interesting. I call bullshit on Chuck Norris. Chuck Norris not strike me down where I sit. But why would you say that? Oh, no, I wasn't offered it. But yes, that if I was offered it, that's the reason why I wouldn't take it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I could picture him as Kreese, though.
You could?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I could too.
They did later do a movie, like Karate Kid type movie called Sidekicks that Chuck Norris is in. So, you know, he got that movie anyway, so
yeah, got it out of his system.
Yeah, and they had a character in there that's sort of a comical version of what John Kreese is. So
okay, yeah, there you go. That's very interesting.
Martin Cove actually got the audition because he got a call from the director that they wanted him to audition. He was then told to wait. Cove wanted the role so much that he turned down other prospects in order to get the part. But when the waiting dragged out for a few weeks, he became annoyed that he was kept turning down parts. Finally, when Alvordson called Cove into audition, Cove was so annoyed at Alvordson that he berated the director and channeled his anger into the intense audition, and ultimately that intensity got him the role. So,
talk about life imitating art.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yep. Awesome. Well, I think that we might end it there in terms of casting what ifs in that segment. And so we'll go into a segment that we actually missed out on doing last week, Stewie.
Okay. And that falls on you. It's not all roses being the host, mate.
No.
Yeah.
It's not.
That's on you.
And that is the question that we ask is there a relatable character to you from this movie? I don't know if there is for either of you.
I would say Daniel, personally. I went through that stage. I won't say bullied, but you felt like the outsider sometimes at school. You felt like martial arts was the way to get respect and that sort of thing. So, you know, Daniel LaRusso is the most reliable one.
Mr. Miyagi, you know, I sit in that office next to the studio here every day and I feel like I'm just the sensei of the journalists, you know. I get Jason often to clean my desk. Tell him wax on, wax off, you know. Others doing chores for me. So, nah, seriously. I think the correct answer is Daniel LaRusso. Everyone that's been a teenager can relate in some way, shape or form to the experience of Daniel, you know, moving to a new school, kind of being the outcast, getting picked on and, you know, things of that nature. So I think Josh nailed it with Daniel. What about you, Jace? Who you got, pal?
Yeah, well, first of all, I can definitely see you as Mr. Miyagi.
Is this a dig of my age?
No, it is. I was watching it last night and like all like the sort of jokes that he said and like the chuckles to himself, I'm like, I see that in you, right? Because you're always so pleased with yourself when you crack jokes.
I am. It's true. Yeah. It's one of my many charms. Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think that I can stray away from Daniel being the answer that I'll give for this question. I think that, yeah, for the reasons that you guys presented, I won't repeat them. But I think that, yeah, we all sort of understand that. So that would be my answer too.
Yeah. For such a subjective question, I find often on this podcast there is a correct answer.
Mm.
Anyway.
It's just to show who's the who's the villain. So we all are, apparently.
Yeah, apparently, yeah. Villains have more fun.
Mm. All right, we'll get to our last prompt of this episode, and that asks... I can see that you're ready, Stewie.
I'm ready.
It asks, if you could have a martial arts movie get made, what would it be about and why?
I'm going to go first with one of my fantastic ideas that I have for this segment that are definitely well thought out, Josh. I don't know how many episodes of Goals on Film you've listened to, but I think you would know if you have listened. Jason knows for sure. He's always here. The fans know because they listen. I hope they still listen. That I always come prepared and I've always got the best ideas. My films, really, I shouldn't be giving them away for free. They should be pitches to Hollywood producers and directors. Do you agree, Jace?
Yes.
Jason with his best hostage voice there. So there's a guy, right, WWF, as it was known back in the day, back in the late 90s, there was a guy who went by the name of Steve Blackman, right? He actually was a maniac. He jumped in from the crowd, unscripted, and started fighting other wrestlers. Oh. He's like a black belt or something, right? And from that, he actually got a brief spell as a professional wrestler in WWF. I don't know what he's doing now. I don't know if he's dead or alive or somewhere in the middle, but that I want to see the Steve Blackman movie be made. I think that would be fantastic.
I would take any sort of biopic of any current fighter out there as a martial arts movie to go. As you know, MMA is pretty much taken over the world, whether people like it, people hate it. There's sometimes no in-betweens. You're either one end of the spectrum or the other. They have some great fighters that have competed over the years. You've got guys like George St. Pierre, John Jones, Anderson Silva, any one of those. Especially probably Anderson Silva, because I'd like to see him go through his life from fighting in Japan, then coming over to the UFC. Because you saw him, anyone that was a fan at the time when he came into the UFC, you didn't think he was going to make a mark. And just from his very first fight, where he just absolutely obliterated Chris Lieben, he just knew from then on it was going to be something special. So I'd take a biopic of Anderson Silva any day. Actually, that's another good movie that would come in out of that WWE Attitude Era. Is another MMA fighter, Ken Shamrock. Imagine the Ken Shamrock story.
Yeah, Ken Shamrock, big one too.
Because he was adopted. Like, he was adopted and then learned to fight. And then he was going to be a pro wrestler and then ended up going into, I think it was Pancrase, Shudo, one of those Japanese martial arts, went over there, and then when the first UFC was on, he's like, I'm doing that. So he did like catch wrestling and submission wrestling to hopes of becoming a pro wrestler, then goes into real fighting for a while, and then finally realizes his dream of going into the WWE. So yeah. And then he goes back after that, goes back and fights again for a few more years in the UFC. So I reckon that'd be another good one as well.
I'm very WWE focused at the moment because WrestleMania was this past weekend and it was fucking fantastic. So yeah. I just want to add that in there. Jace, what's your movie about, mate?
Yeah, well, I don't really have any like real life examples of who I would want a movie to be based on or anything like that. But I think that we've talked about in this episode already about like the martial arts that are shown in The Karate Kid. So that, you know, apparently it's actually Tung Soo Do. But I would want a movie where either the main character or, you know, the main sort of dojo, every student there learns a different martial art and they go into the tournament. I'll make it the main character. The main character is well-versed in, you know, 10 different martial arts types and he enters the tournament and at this tournament he sort of like looks at his opponents, he judges on what martial art they're doing and he works out, oh, I can do this martial art to sort of get an edge over this opponent. And at each different fight, he uses a different martial arts technique.
That sounds great. I've got another one.
Hmm.
What about it's just the Karate Kid, right? But the kid's born with a deformity where he's got fins for arms and bird feet for legs.
You know he's just got to take up karate because his life's going to be hell. His life's going to be absolutely hell.
Nah, I like all these ideas. They're great ideas. Yeah. Netflix, come at us.
We've generated, you know, double the amount of ideas that we normally do. All right, that does now bring us to the end of the episode. So, Stewie, Josh, would you like to share your social media handles and any other avenues or platforms where our listeners and our fans can see a bit of your work?
So if anyone is on Twitter, you can follow me at Josh_Merce, which is MERCE. Someone already had Josh_Merce, so we're gonna have that. So I had to take the R off.
Those bastards.
I know, right? and if you're looking for me, my profile picture is me getting spear tackled when I played rugby league. So you'll be able to find me pretty easy. So yeah, there on Instagram, it's just Josh_Mercer. And you can follow my website, which is justmerce.com. And I'm also on Substack as just Joshua Mercer. So
you're also a professional journalist. Where can we see you get your professional journalism on, Josh?
Well, if you live in Broken Hill or the Spencer Gulf region in South Australia, you can see me Monday to Friday at 7 p.m. on 7.2. If not, you can hit up Spencer Gulf Nightly News on YouTube. Or you can search me up on YouTube as well, just Josh Mercer, and it'll have that same picture of me getting spear tackled.
As per usual, you know by now, you can find me at Stewie is Sick of It on Twitter. You can find me at Stewie the Sports Guy on Instagram. You can also find me at Stewie the Sports Guy. Is that right? Is it Stewie the Sports Guy on TikTok? I think it is.
Yeah. I'm sure it's Stewie the Sports Guy.
Thank God you guys know. If you want to see a picture of my former cat, Moxie, you can look me up at Stewie the Sports Guy on TikTok also. You can find my work on Edge of the Crowd sometimes as well. I'm on the Logan's Legacy podcast, Succession Recap podcast as well, part of the Edge of the Crowd podcast network. I write for the Barrier Truth if you're in Broken Hill. So grab a copy of the paper and help us out. Anywhere else? No, if you see me in the street, walk up to me, shake my hand. I'm a nice guy. I'll say hi. Yeah, that's it. What about you, Jace?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, all at the handle at Jace Irves. You can also catch any of my work on Edge of the Crowd as well. And of course, like Stewie, any of my work at The Barrier Truth.
Can people approach you in the street and say hi?
They can say hi. I'm not sure if I'll be friendly.
Yeah? You're not going to shake their hand?
No.
What if they bring their own sanitizer?
All right.
Yeah? Okay. Yeah. What about you, Josh?
Yeah, go for it. We can talk, shoot the breeze.
Hug?
Have a coffee.
Can they give you a hug?
Fine. They can.
Can they give you a kiss?
Yeah, why not?
On the mouth?
No, I don't. That might be a bit too far.
What if it was Jen?
No, Jen can. She's all right. She might get a bit angry if other people start doing it. But, yeah, you can... see me walking down the street in Broken Hill, I'm probably the guy in the suit carrying a video camera.
And the iconic bucket hat.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, and the blue bucket hat.
All right, you have been listening to Goals on Film. You can find Goals on Film on Twitter and Instagram at Goals on Film Pod. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel, searching Goals on Film, where we'll post video highlights after each episode. Goals on Film is also part of the Edge of the Crowd network. You can find Edge of the Crowd on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn and TikTok at Edge of the Crowd. You can also see any of our stories, be it sport, culture or politics, on our website, edgeofthecrowd.com. If you've enjoyed this episode, please rate us 5 stars on Spotify so we can continue to do these episodes. If there is a film that you want us to watch and review on this podcast, please do let us know as well. But for now, thanks for listening and we'll catch you next week.